Coming up on Fronteras, in New Mexico, secrecy has surrounded the state's allegations of Medicaid fraud against 15 mental health providers. Now, a partial release of documents has shed some light.
The case file audit did not uncover what it would consider to be credible allegations of fraud.
An alleged culture of corruption in New Mexico's mental health system and the state's refusal to release evidence of that allegation. Every year, over 30,000 people in Texas become certified hunters.
I cannot think of anything more important than parents being able to expose their children to recreational activities like hunting.
In recent years, the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department has seen an increased demand for hunter education in Spanish. That story coming up during Fronteras, but first, the news. This is Fronteras, a journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras was created via an unprecedented multimedia collaboration among seven public radio stations. I'm Crystal Chavez. The latest revelation of documents tied to former National Security Agency contractor Edward Snowden is angering some Mexicans. Fronteras reporter Lorne Madelon of Marfa Public Radio looked into reaction south of the border.
Over the past 6 years, the NSA has rebuilt a former Sony chip fabrication plant in San Antonio, Texas, into an intelligence gathering center. Newly released information tied to the Edward Snowden affair documents U.S. spying from the facility of the email and other sensitive communications of current Mexican President Enrique Peña Nieto and former Mexican President Felipe Calderón.
La traducción de lo que publicó Der Spiegel sobre el espionaje de los Estados Unidos.
That's Mexican journalist Carmen Aristegui on Radio MVSA in Mexico City, delving into what's become a big story there, broken by the German newspaper Der Spiegel. We reached former Mexican Foreign Secretary Jorge Castañeda on his cell phone. Still a player in Mexican politics, Castañeda recalls the U.S. spying on Brazil's president Dilma Rousseff and calls the spying on Mexico an unfriendly attack.
People like Peña Nieto and President Rousseff of Brazil are going to have to take a tougher stand in relation to President Obama on this issue, and he is going to have to take a more forthcoming stand trying to get to the bottom of this, because it can continue endlessly. We don't know what else there is there, and I don't think we've seen the end of this.
The Obama administration has promised to investigate. In Mexico, there's a saying, the U.S. never misses an opportunity to miss an opportunity. In this case, to offend a neighbor it supposedly wants close relations with. Federico Estevez is a political scientist at Mexico City's ITAM, a leading private university that practically breeds diplomats for Mexico's foreign service. Estevez says Mexicans are hardly blasé about this, but they're not surprised.
There are many elements that are angry and that were spied upon. How long has this been going on? Probably ages, although not with this technology. So I'm not really surprised in that sense. I would think that U.S. intelligence has systematically gathered information.
President Peña Nieto has not officially addressed the revelation. Mexico City-based reporter David Agron often writes about the yin and yang of a complicated bilateral relationship.
But as for retaliation, severing some sort of ties, that's probably not in the interest of his administration. He doesn't want to obviously look like he's some sort of U.S. stooge, or that he's permitting this, you know, some sort of bad behavior to go on in Mexico. But he also knows that he needs the economic relationship to be strong. He's probably going to probably not overlook this, but at least not let it hinder affairs between the two countries.
Mexico says officially this practice is unacceptable. In a tweet, former President Calderón says he's told Mexico's Foreign Secretary, José Antonio Meade, to convey Calderón's vehement protest against the spying. I'm Lorne Madelon in Marfa, Texas.
Democrats in Texas are hoping to turn the state blue or at least begin leaning that way in 2014. Leaping across political lines is a judge who won his seat during the Republican-dominated 2010 midterm elections. From our Fronteras desk, Joey Palacios reports.
Judge Carlo Key of a Bexar County court was welcomed by Democrats with open arms on Monday. Key says he came to his decision based on his beliefs that justice should be served to people without prejudice towards race, color, creed, or whom they choose to love.
I cannot tolerate a political party in which hate speech elevates a candidate to higher office rather than disqualifying them. I cannot be a member of a party that is proud to destroy the financial lives of hundreds of thousands of federal employees in a vain attempt to repeal a law which provides health care to millions of Americans across the country.
Texas House Speaker Joe Strauss calls Key's decision to jump a mistake and says that many Democrats in Texas have switched to the Republican Party in the time that Strauss has been in office. In San Antonio, Joey Palacios reporting.
In June, New Mexico's behavioral health care system was thrown into chaos. The state abruptly froze Medicaid payments to over a dozen mental health providers in the state after an audit allegedly found widespread fraud. Those providers served nearly 30,000 patients, but neither the public nor those accused have been able to see the actual audit because the state says an investigation continues. Now, a partial release of the audit's findings has raised further questions about New Mexico's decision to go after the clinics. For the Fronteras Desk, Tristan Autone reports.
Late last year, the New Mexico Human Services Department was alerted to what it calls aberrant billing practices for 15 mental health agencies in the state. That alert came from Optum Health, the company responsible for managing Medicaid money for the state's mental health providers, and that led to an audit of the agencies in question. Based on the findings of that audit, the Human Services Department found that there were, quote, credible allegations of fraud. However, a partial release of the audit last week may say otherwise. Here's what the audit says.
The case file audit did not uncover what it would consider to be credible allegations of fraud, nor any significant concerns related to consumer safety.
That's Greg Williams with the New Mexico Foundation for Open Government, FOG for short. Shortly after the freezing of Medicaid dollars, FOG sued the state to get copies of the audit. To date, no one has seen the full report, and what was finally released last week, 58 pages of 400, was heavily redacted. Williams is continuing the court fight to get the entire document released.
Because it's so significant to the public, because of the federal funding, and because of the fact that it's health care to our citizens, we take the position that it's very important for this information to be released.
The line in the release materials that reads, did not uncover what it would consider to be credible allegations of fraud, seems to challenge the Human Services Department claim that there were credible allegations of fraud. However, Department spokesman Matt Kennicott says otherwise.
There's no discrepancy there. The audit firm's role is not to find credible allegations of fraud. As you'll read in the federal regulations, only the state Medicaid agency can determine if there are credible allegations of fraud.
And they have done so, Kennicott says, on the basis of information in the audit, plus whistleblowers and the earlier report by Optum Health. But that Optum Health report isn't public either, and there is widespread speculation about whether the company was equipped to even report fraud. Former State Senator Dede Feldman, interviewed at a coffee shop in Albuquerque, is a leading skeptic.
Optum finding credible allegations of fraud is like your mother told you, the pot calling the kettle black.
According to Feldman, problems in the state's mental health system began in 2009 when Optum Health began managing providers. In short, they didn't pay their bills, provider invoices were returned, and the legislature had to step in. Feldman says it was a crisis, and Optum was eventually fined $1 million due to its inadequate IT system.
Optum told the providers that we're just going to pay you every invoice that you ever sent us. We're just going to pay it in full, and then we'll reconcile it later.
Feldman says shortly after the first crisis passed, Optum was sanctioned again, and constant monitoring had to be put in place to ensure the company didn't screw up anymore. The Human Services Department says aberrant billing practices detected by Optum lasted over a 3-year period, including times Optum itself had trouble managing the system.
Are we now to believe that they've corrected every flaw in their system and are now able to judge these providers as not just inadequate, but fraudulent? I don't think so.
As of now, the 15 mental health providers accused of fraud have effectively closed down, and their clinics are currently being managed by 5 Arizona companies. The management takeover has left 30,000 patients, many with schizophrenia, severe drug and alcohol addictions, and other serious disorders, struggling to find help in a mental health system undergoing disruption and transition. According to the Human Services Department, the allegations of fraud are under investigation by the U.S. Attorney, the FBI, and New Mexico Attorney General Gary King. King says his office is still working to determine whether there's a criminal case or not. In Albuquerque, I'm Tristan Autown.
There's still more Fronteras coming up. Texas is seeing an increased demand for hunting classes in Spanish.
I cannot think of anything more important than parents being able to expose their children to recreational activities like hunting.
Stay tuned. This is Fronteras. I'm Crystal Chavez. Every year, more than 30,000 people in Texas become certified hunters. The Texas Parks and Wildlife Department offers an education course required of most hunters in the state. In recent years, the department has seen an increased demand for hunter education in Spanish. For Fronteras, Veronica Zaragovia reports from Austin.
Dalia Zuniga is clutching a gun tightly as she takes aim at a practice target sheet. Zuniga is getting her certification so she can legally hunt in Texas. Her husband took the two-day hunter education course from Texas Parks and Wildlife with her. So did their 10-year-old daughter.
I really like nature, and since he does too, we're taking this together so we can all share in it, the whole family.
Hispanics are poised to surpass non-Hispanic whites in Texas as a majority racial group by about 2020. So there's been a growing demand for classes in Spanish. This class last month in Austin had almost 20 people. When course instructor Maria Araujo launched these classes in 2008, only 6 or 7 students attended. Sometimes she has to turn someone away.
I teach in Austin at least one class every year, and I am getting requests to go and teach classes in Spanish in other parts of the state. I've already taught 2 classes in Port Arthur, for example. I also had to go in and train one of our state park staff to teach the class in Spanish in the Big Bend region.
Araujo says parents like the Zunigas motivate her to put in all this effort. She remembers one Spanish-speaking adult back in 2006 who was fined for hunting without certification. He didn't know he needed to take this class.
If we had not been able to serve this parent, we would lose the next generation of children interested in participating in an activity. And I cannot think of anything more important than parents being able to expose their children to recreational activities like hunting.
She wasn't teaching the class in Spanish at that time, so she volunteered to translate the class from English for him.
That's what motivated me, because at the end of the class, this little kid, he was very excited that his father had finally got the certificate and that they were going to be able to continue to go hunting.
Anyone born after September 1971 is required to get certified in Texas. Hunters also need to buy a license. Fines for not following procedure can range from $25 to $500. Usually a judge will give hunters a chance to take the class within a certain time frame, and then the citation gets reduced or dismissed. Araujo says hunting is an important wildlife management tool in Texas, especially with one animal in particular.
Feral hogs. We need a lot of help hunting feral hogs.
Feral hogs destroy vegetation underground, like roots or bulbs. In Texas, they cause about $500 million in damages each year. They also contaminate ponds, creeks, and riverbanks with their waste. Mark Tyson is with the Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Service.
With more folks out on the ground conducting hunting and trapping and all other legal methods for reducing feral hogs, would actually increase the harvest rate, which would get us moving closer towards curbing population growth.
Texas has about 2.5 million feral hogs. In 2010, roughly 750,000 of them were killed or harvested, about 29% of the population. Even still, their numbers have continued to rise.
To hold the population steady, in other words, for the population not to continue growth, a harvest rate of 66% would actually need to be accomplished.
Only about 10 classes in Spanish are currently offered each year. That's likely to put only a small dent in that annual harvest rate. Still, back at the certification class in Austin, Dalia Zuniga is pleased, judging her target sheet.
Not right in the center, but close enough. All I need is practice.
She says she'll get to practice when she and her family go deer hunting in San Angelo next month. Reporting from Austin, I'm Veronica Saragovia for Fronteras.
A group of protesters arrested for stopping two buses of immigrant defendants on their way to court are now asking for those defendants to help the protesters in their defense case. But as Michelle Marisco reports from Tucson, those defendants were deported and the protesters will have to find them.
In early October, 18 people were arrested for chaining themselves to the wheels of two buses carrying immigrants caught crossing the border illegally. Those on board the bus were headed for a hearing under Operation Streamline. That's a mass hearing that fast-tracks immigration violations. Police charged the protesters with hindering the prosecution of those on the bus. That's a felony. Margot Cowan is an activist, and she's a public defender here. She says those on the bus were deported without a Streamline hearing. If her clients are formally charged, she says she'll need those people on the bus to testify on her client's behalf.
We do need to find them because we need to understand who they are, what their stories were, and why they were poised to be prosecuted in order to defend against a claim of hindering prosecution.
Ethan Beasley was one of those arrested. He says they have set up a hotline for those people who were on the bus that day to call.
We are inquiring to our contacts among the various shelters, community, and faith organizations and human rights groups along the border.
Immigration is a federal issue, but the hindering prosecution charge could end up in state court. A spokeswoman for the county attorney's office says it is still deciding whether to charge the 18 with a felony. The public defender's office will defend the case. In Tucson, I'm Michel Marisco.
The Arizona desert is a killer. Every year it claims the lives of migrants who cross the border illegally and make their way north. But in the past year, the number of migrants rescued by Border Patrol spiked, according to recently released data. And that's despite the fact that the number of people crossing the Arizona border has been falling. From the Fronteras desk in Phoenix, Jude Jaffe Block has this report on what it's like to answer those 911 calls.
This is 911. Do you have an emergency?
The callers tend to sound desperate, usually speaking Spanish, often with poor reception. This man, who said his name was Yoel, called for help in the middle of a June day when the temperatures were in the triple digits. We're dying. We need help, he says. His call is answered by a Maricopa County Sheriff's Office dispatcher who loops in a Border Patrol agent. The two agencies frequently work together to rescue migrants. But the geography of the cell phone towers and the kind of phones migrants typically use make it hard to precisely trace their location. Yoel wasn't able to identify any nearby landmarks. He says he just sees low hills made of rock. Michelle Bush, a 911 dispatcher for Maricopa County Sheriff's Office, says that's typical.
North, south, east, west, they're like, have no clue. All I see is mountains.
Bush works in Phoenix, far from the border, but has fielded plenty of these calls. Some migrants trying to avoid Border Patrol checkpoints walk through the Arizona desert, some 80 miles, to get to the east-west artery, I-8. But too often, they become dehydrated first.
I don't tend to ask, are you an illegal or were you dropped there? Or, you know, my job is to find out where they are.
Rescue missions can take hours, and each one can cost thousands of dollars. Last fiscal year, Maricopa County spent at least $100,000 on search and rescue, with $85,000 reimbursed by the state. The sheriff's office has only just started to track what portion of that is used on migrant rescues. Expanding cell phone coverage in remote areas of the desert is making it possible for migrants to make more of these calls. Bush says they're typically using cell phones that don't have a carrier in Arizona.
It could only dial 911, can't receive in calls, or they can't make out calls.
This summer, Bush's agency rescued more than 30 people in the southwestern part of the county. Newly released stats from Border Patrol show the number of migrants rescued in the state in the past fiscal year was 50% higher than 2 years ago. Migrants may now be walking longer distances to avoid detection, making the journey riskier.
Está respirando, está todavía desmayado.
That same day in June, when the migrant named Yoel called for help, Bush got a call from another group a little while later. They were already sick and fainting in the heat. She had to give a pep talk to one man in his early 20s named Gilberto. Bush says, listen to me. I know you think you can't do it, that you're in bad shape. But she tells them she won't let them down. She's sending a helicopter. She coaches them to make a fire so the helicopter can spot them. Do they know where we are? Gilberto asks. Do you swear to me? Bush gives her word. I thank you with all my heart, he says. Yet when the helicopter got to the area, it located a different group of lost border crossers and rescued them first. One of the men called back desperate, convinced he was going to die there.
He wanted to give me numbers, addresses, his wife's name, his kids. And I'm like, no, that's not what I do. I'm not going to do that because you're going to survive.
Bush does check to see what happens at the end of a rescue after she's no longer on the phone. That particular rescue took over 7 hours and ultimately wound up locating over a dozen migrants.
They did make it to Border Patrol. They got medical help. And from there, you know, I'm sure that they were taken back, but they all made it, thankfully.
Not everyone does. The Maricopa County Sheriff's Office recovered 17 dead bodies in the same area this summer. More than 160 bodies were discovered statewide in the past year. In Phoenix, I'm Jude Joffe Block.
You've been listening to Fronteras, a Corporation for Public Broadcasting funded journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras is a collaboration of public radio stations KJZZ Phoenix, KPBS San Diego, KNAU Flagstaff, KNPR Las Vegas, KRWG Las Cruces, KUAZ Tucson, and KSTX San Antonio. We're online at fronterasdesk.org. We're on Facebook, and for headlines and updates, follow us on Twitter. Our handle is at Fronteras Desk. You may subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. The theme music was composed by Chilanga Cakewalk. I'm Texas Public Radio's Crystal Chavez. Thanks for listening.